Thanks for tuning in to the Boiler Express podcast. Join us each week as we dive into all things Purdue sports. You'll hear in-depth analysis of our previous and upcoming games, as well as interviews with players and people involved in the Purdue sports fandom. Be sure to check us out on Twitter and YouTube for our live stream shows as well.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Boiler Express podcast. I know there's nothing else going on in the world tonight that you guys would be paying attention to, so you're all watching this tonight, so we appreciate you tuning in. Here to talk a little bit about football's game against Northwestern this past weekend, and then we've got Purdue basketball back. No more exhibitions, no more none of that. We are in official basketball season. And I think there was a lot of good things. There's some things that were a little eye-opening watching that basketball game, but, you know, really enjoyed it. I feel like Braden Smith really showed people wrong that, oh, just because Zach Edey's gone, he's not going to get assists anymore. Well, he dropped 15 in his first game back. So, yeah, how are you guys doing tonight?
I'm doing well, man. Yeah, like you said, there's nothing else going on in the world. So, you know, excited to be here and talk some Purdue sports tonight.
Yeah, definitely don't feel like I'm about to throw up or anything. No.
Oh, man. Yeah. So the Northwestern game, Purdue football's game against Northwestern this past week, and I know a couple of you guys got to go to the game. Russ, I think you said this was your daughter's first game in attendance. Is that correct?
It was. It was. She loved it, was like rowdy. I made the maybe mistake of putting her on my shoulders for the opening kickoff because then she wanted to spend the whole game on my shoulders, would have impacted the the viewing experience for those behind us. But then halftime hit and all of a sudden she was trying to take a nap on the bleachers. So that was that was quite the experience. But no, she loved it. She loved it. So that definitely will not be her last. Maybe her last for a little bit, but we'll see when we decide to go back.
Yeah, that's I think our girls are around the same age, and I always think about when I'm going to take my daughter to her first game because I don't know how long she'd last. She loves, like, when we're watching a game on TV, she'll, even if it's not Purdue, she just sees me watching like football or basketball. She just sees me into the game. She'll be like, "Dad, tell them Boiler up." And I'm like, "Yeah, Boiler up." So it's just fun. So yeah, I can't wait to take her to her first game. But kind of a rough start in the first half. I know it was pretty close to halftime. It was 17-3, and then Hudson Card was able to right the ship and get a score in before halftime. And I didn't get to watch a lot of the game, but it sounds like Hudson played fairly well despite the loss.
Yeah, so I was traveling. So I was following sporadically on my phone, watching score updates and tuning in when I could, and then I did watch the 30-minute condensed version after. But in I'll caveat everything I have to say with that. But in the condensed version, that was my immediate takeaway when watching it, was that Hudson Card played really well. I thought all things considered, zero turnovers. I just feel like as Purdue fans, we've asked to be competitive. And then when we are competitive and we lose a game, we're right there. I'm not satisfied. I'm not happy. I want more. Because like you go all that way, you force overtime, and then you don't walk away with a win, which is unfortunate. But I feel like this is the first game where, Purdue did play complimentary football, to use that overused term. I feel like Purdue was balanced on both sides of the ball for the most part. Just unfortunate. We just couldn't get a win. I mean, this just felt like one of the few games we have left on our schedule that was winnable, and to let it just kind of slip away as it did, is never good. There's a missed field goal, I believe. Is that right, Russ? Do we have a missed field goal in the game?
I don't believe we did.
Yeah, yeah. Like I said, I just watched the condensed version. I'm getting my games mixed up possibly here, but
well, I think I know what you're talking about because I think Walters, after the game, was asked why they didn't go for a field goal to tie it up or something like that.
Oh, so that was the questionable fourth quarter. Yeah, I mean, we can talk about this. So the situation was, I think it would have been a 40-yard field goal in overtime, and Walters opted to go for it on fourth and six instead of kicking the field goal. A lot of people are upset about that call. A lot of people are upset about the decision to go for the first down and to just keep your offense on the field instead of kicking the field goal. I don't know, Russ. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, it doesn't matter because they scored in two plays from the 40.
Great point.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah. You talk about playing complimentary football, and we did play for parts of the game some very good complimentary football, but that was, I mean, you couldn't ask for a better scenario where you didn't score in the first half of our time. Is now they got to start in the 40-yard line, which, you know, if you do the math, that means if you're kicking from there, you're talking about a 57-yard field goal. So, like, obviously you have to get probably a first down to be in field goal range. So, So it's three and out, and you go to a second overtime, but instead we give them a touchdown and two plays from the 40. So, Carr did seem like he played better. Some of the read options, I know we've criticized that a little bit in our chat with how much quicker Ryan Brown is at decision-making when it comes to those. Some of Hudson Card's read options felt like they took forever. Like, felt like he's literally standing there holding the ball for, like, so long that you start to hear, like, fans break out and, like, do something, pull it away or something. Do something. You know, like, it's like, I don't think I can remember plays taking so long to break down that you hear multiple fans yelling to do something in the middle of the play.
Right.
But he was, I think he was top five nationally per Pro Football Focus as far as quarterback performances on the week. So that makes it even more disappointing that we didn't pull out the W.
Mm-hmm. And I feel honestly like, and I think a lot of the scrutiny, or at least like the like really raw emotion behind the scrutiny from that fourth down decision may just come from how the last seven games have gone this season for Purdue football. But I think, you know, going forward on that fourth down or kicking it, it's like he looks like a genius if they go for it and they make it and they get to march down the field, and he looks like an idiot if they don't make it and they, you know, could have potentially put three on the board. But like Russ said, you know, it doesn't even matter in the grand scheme of things because Northwestern scored two plays later. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's been my take. And I've seen some pretty heated comments about his decision. And yeah, I've heard people call it boneheaded. I've heard things way worse than that, but I don't think it's a boneheaded call. And here's why. Do either of you ever play blackjack? Ever?
Yeah,
okay. So,
yeah.
And Painter's talked about this. So you get dealt a 14, the dealer shows a 6. You should stay. Now, the probability says there's like a 62% chance you're going to win that hand if you stay versus hit. Now, like the guy next to you, he hits and he gets like, you know, let's say a 5. And you think, man, that was stupid. I should have hit. But like, you have to know that you made the best decision with the information you had available to you at that time and be okay with that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Walter said he knows from film, from practice, that from that hash and that distance, we can't kick field goals. And so he's taking, I mean, I'm sure he has thousands of kicks of data to make this decision on. So all that's going into consideration here. And so, you know, unfortunately, football isn't a game where you're doing 1,000 simulations, right? Right. It's just one play. But it's one of those things where maybe I want to believe if you do it 1,000 times, that yields a better outcome 60% of the time, 70% of the time. And Painter's talked about using that same analogy in that, you know, if you have a 70% hand in blackjack, you have to play it that way every single time. And sometimes you're going to lose. Like, you're not going to win every time. So,
right.
I want to believe that decision was made with all that in mind. And if Walter says that, you know, field goal kicking from that hash and that distance isn't good, then I have to believe it.
And
I mean, he's not stupid. He knows more about football than I ever will. So,
and let's not bury the service level value of that statement there either. Like, we're a Power Four Division I football program, and we're making a statement like, it would have been a 40-yard field goal, so we went for it. Like, you know, 40-yard field goals should not be a difficult thing to accomplish.
Right.
I get we have a true freshman kicker. I get that. I get this team is still on the rebuild. But, you know, that's a problem. If you're a top-level football program and you don't trust a 40-yarder, that's a little bit of an issue.
Yeah.
I don't know, Russ. I'm just basing this off of memory, but it feels like 40 yards in a college game is a closer to like 50-50, just purely empirical viewing here. Am I wrong on that?
I think kicking as a whole, especially, you know, at the pro level, but even the college level, kicking has, I feel like, gotten easier. That's why you see the NFL moving back to a, you know, 30, 35-yard, 40-yard extra point basically now. You know,
yeah, I mean, kicking in the NFL is crazy this season. Like 50-yarders aren't a big deal. And I mean, how many 60-yarders have we seen this season? It's crazy. One last night. So yeah, I guess I hadn't thought about it so much that it's trickling down to college as well. But yeah, I mean, I feel like 5-6 years ago, a 40-yarder at least probably would have been like a 50-50 kick at best. But I mean, I trust that he has the information to make that decision. And like Damon said, if it works, you look like a genius. If it doesn't, and people call you an idiot and all sorts of other names. So,
go ahead. It kind of reminds me of, you know, the decision to go for it on the 2-point conversion to beat Illinois. A little bit different because the game was in our hands at that point. So I understand that it's a little bit different, but I think it's the same. Somewhat the same thing. I think people did like it a little bit more because it was like that was the first game against an FBS opponent all season. We've had the game was in our hands to like win. We had it right there. But I feel like it's very similar to that. It's like if they hit it, it's awesome. You know, we get our first FBS win this year. If they don't get it, then, you know, we lose the game and that sucks. But you like the moxie of like going for it there.
Don't forget about Illinois.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about. Sorry. I don't know if I had mentioned that. I feel like it's similar to that though, the reaction there. So yeah, I don't know. It's just tough times. If your name is Ryan Walters and you live in West Lafayette, Indiana, it's just tough times for you right now. So it's ugly out here in the streets of the internet as a Purdue football fan.
Yeah, because I take what he says as the truth as well with the data that he has and knowledge he has. So when he says things like, you know, we're close and we're building a foundation, you know, I get that. And that, you know, starts to get my hopes back up and get excitement back up. But, you know, there's the common statement in sports, and especially football, is you are what your record says you are at the end of the day, really. Like, you can talk about strength of schedule. You can talk about this injury. You can talk about rebuild. But at the end of the day, like, your record is what, you know, that's what defines your success, is your wins and losses.
Mm-hmm. When I look at, you know, oddly for me, and just like when I think about each individual game, the lowest point for me this season in terms of how I felt after a game and how I felt about the state of the program was not Notre Dame. It was actually Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. Because Notre Dame, it's like, okay, you pointed out some flaws. There's plenty of season left. Fix it. You're good. But when this is a, you know, by all things considered, a down year for Wisconsin. This is a Wisconsin team that hadn't been very good offensively and that felt like we had a really good chance of being competitive against. And I mean, I talked about it on here and how I listened to a Wisconsin podcast and they were talking about, you know, that being a tune-up game for them and how I perceived that as being pretty disrespectful. And they walked all over Purdue. I mean, and not only that, Purdue had two interceptions in that game. I mean, and it was a 50-ish point loss. And so that was the lowest point for me. And I think about that game and I think about, you know, from week to week since then, I mean, there has been improvement. There has been improvement. I mean, we put up 300 yards against Oregon, didn't have a single point to show for it because we got aggressive and went for it on fourth down. Maybe we have a kicking problem. I mean, we didn't kick a field goal until Nebraska, you know, so we don't have a huge sample size, but you know, we were tied with Nebraska going into the fourth quarter, zeros. I mean, so just there are things that we can look at and say, like, okay, we have improved. I mean, we went to overtime against Illinois, overtime against Northwestern. So we are trending upward. But yeah, you're right, Russ. It's we are what our record says we are, and that's a 1-7 football team right now who is showing signs of improving but still hasn't figured out how to win games.
It's kind of like we're moving forward, but we're like stuck in quicksand at the same time. Feels like we're just kind of trudging through.
And yeah, I think let's see what happens this week before we say we're making improvement. Because, you know, being competitive is better than not being competitive, yes. But like you said, Wisconsin's on a down year and they did what they did to us. Northwestern, you know, by most measurements, was our second easiest game of the year this year. Mm-hmm. And we couldn't get it done at home as a favorite. So that's, you know, that's pretty demoralizing when you're like, you want something to latch onto for the season because you know what's coming with a game at Ohio State, with Penn State at home, with a game at IU, you know, the game at Michigan State, you know, maybe something happens and we can get something done there because Michigan State isn't exactly playing lights out. But those other three teams are, what, top eight in the first CFP that came out?
Yeah.
So,
and I don't know how much, like, I mean, I'm sure that the guys are doing the best they can, but I don't know how much I believe when Coach Walters, when he says that the locker room's still together, nobody's like faltering at all, nobody's having like negative thoughts about the team or the program or anything. I just have a hard time believing that because you can only get pummeled and beaten down while you're on the ground over and over and over again and still be like, yeah, coach, we got this. You know what I mean? After 8 weeks of that, I mean, 7 weeks of it now, but yeah, it's hard to believe.
Yeah. I've often wondered that, you know, at some point, do you start to believe, you know, I can't win. We can't win as a team, as a player. I don't know. I mean, I feel like it's human nature to some degree. You have to start to say, okay, hey, like we're 1-7. You know, we just lost to Northwestern at home. I mean, dude, so what's your mindset going to the shoe now?
Dak Prescott. I don't know if you guys saw the clip of, I'll tie this in real quick. Dak Prescott got caught on camera mouthing, we effing suck.
Oh yeah.
On the sidelines, this past weekend when they were playing the Falcons. So did definitely possible.
What's that?
Did you not see that?
I did not. I've kind of started phoning in some of my NFL fandom.
Yeah, I almost sent it to you, but I thought Russ definitely has seen this as a Cowboys fan. So, I should have.
But, yeah, I mean, you hope that there's – I mean, of course, Walters is never going to be like, yeah, you know, the team's in shambles and we're – you know, everybody is ready for the season to be over with. But you got to wonder how together the team is right now with just how, you know, how things are. I hope that for all that – because there's some guys on this team that I think do have some really big talent that could do really great things. And I just hope that we either figure it out or, you know, something it gets fixed.
That is the case, if it is the scenario that things are in shambles, would you respect him more if he said that? I'm just, this is purely hypothetical. There's no wrong answer or anything, but
I don't know if I would respect him more for it. I feel like that would almost put like your team in a bad light, as far as like saying that in a press conference, because I know he's not going to say that. No coach is ever going to say that unless, you know, things are just that bad. But I don't know. I don't think I would respect him more for it. I think it would throw me off more than anything. I'd be like, whoa.
Well, these guys are they're competitors, right? They're D1, right. You know, athletes, top level D1 athletes. So they're, you know, if you don't believe you can win, why are you taking the field? You know, yeah, like it definitely messes with morale a little bit. Maybe you aren't as confident, but I think I texted you guys in the first half, even when we were down, that watching the game, it felt like we were the more talented team. It really did. It felt like one of the things we struggled with is something we struggled with all season, but we struggled with situational football a little bit. You know, the whole not being able to get off the field on third down again was a big thing on Saturday. You know, I think that's what it comes down to is you sit there and you see a team that, like, you know, we get a sack on first down and we only give up like a 4-yard pass on second down. You're like, all right, yeah, 3rd and 15. Here we go. Let's get a stop. And then 16-yard pass, you know, or, you know, hey, we get them 3rd and 22. Let's go. Oh, somehow they escape for a 23-yard gain. You know, it's just like, you know, we show flashes of getting in a good spot and then just not being able to execute in that one play to get off the field and flip the momentum in our favor.
I tell you what, though, I think there's something in the water in West Lafayette because that's been a Purdue kryptonite for as long as I can remember. You know, some teams not as much as others, but I, you know, even when Brom was the coach, I always remember expecting a third and long to not go in our favor. Not always, but, you know, not being surprised when that happens. I feel like that's always been a Purdue issue.
Yeah, as much as we pulled away from Ohio State in that famous Tyler Trent game, the recipe in that game really was we held in the field goals or fourth down stops in the red zone. Like, they were driving on us. We could not stop them as far as a between the 20s game, but, you know, Blackman just played out of his mind in the red zone and they kept going for it, trying to push to get a kill shot. And we kept getting a stop. And then, you know, Rondale Moore did his thing. DJ Knox did his thing. And then they were pressing, give up a turnover. And it wasn't like we necessarily dominated that game and just shut them out and gave up no yards. They just we executed the situational football in an opposite manner of what we've been doing this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agreed. Yeah, we made the plays when they needed to be made, and they did try to get aggressive. They tried to go for it on fourth down in the red zone multiple times, and Blackman, I think what do we say, he was targeted 14 times in that game.
Yeah, he showed up
big time. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. So speaking of Ohio State, we do play Ohio State this weekend. As of now, the spread 35. Ohio State favored by 35. I've seen some things about this being like the largest line in a long time. For a Big Ten game, but what do you guys think? You think this is a situation where Ohio State covers, or how do you think this game's going to go? I guess is what I'm asking.
Exactly.
Silence is so
exactly.
Well, okay. Ohio State. I talked about this last night. I was on. I was a guest on the OHO Iowa podcast, and we talked about this. And I asked them as a guest. I asked a question and said, "What does Purdue have to do to win this game?" And the main thing was get out to a big early start and have multiple turnovers. And Eric, who's the host over there at the OHO Iowa podcast, effectively said that he felt. Ohio State has overlooked some teams this year, particularly Nebraska. I know it was one that he mentioned. There's another one as well, Penn State, I believe it was. So, I think if there's any chance for Purdue, it's something like that, right? It's something like Purdue has to hope that they're being overlooked. Cody said he's afraid to watch the game. I'm with you, Cody. Yeah, I'm with you. I'll be watching it. But let's see who else. Yeah, Oregon. Oregon was another good example of a team that they possibly overlooked, wild ending to that game. But I'm looking at this game and I'm thinking, okay, how can Purdue do against Ohio State comparatively speaking to some of the other teams they play? Like, can we do better than Michigan State, who they beat 38-7? Can we do better than Marshall, who they beat 49-14? And that's honestly where my mind's at right now. Is how do we rack and stack, so to speak?
The optimistic answer is do what we did against Oregon, but finish drives.
Finish drives.
7 out of 10 drives, we said, right, against Oregon, we made it onto the Oregon side of the field, but got shut out.
Seven out of ten, despite the CBS reporter saying that Purdue struggled to even get across the 50, and we did literally 7 out of 10 drives. So.
We turned 3 of those 7 drives into touchdowns and maybe 1 or 2 into a field goal. Then all of a sudden you're talking about a completely different game, which I know that's a lot easier said than done, way easier said than done. Not, don't hear what I'm not saying, but
right.
We move the football like we did against Oregon, but actually finish. And then our defense gets a turnover or two and, maybe gets Ohio State to take a chance where they shoot themselves in the foot here or there. Then, you could see, some kind of miracle happen, but it's really, do we get off the field on third down on defense? And do we sustain drives at least on offense? Because that's where the Notre Dame game got out of hand, right? Like three and out, turn the ball over, three and out. That's how teams score. You can't get anything sustained on offense, and you can't stop a dang thing on defense.
Yeah, and Russ, I think it's fair to say the point you're making about the Oregon game is that the score doesn't reflect what actually happened on the field. Like we lost 35-0, but it wasn't like. It wasn't like we were just getting pummeled. It doesn't.
It's like the record, right? Like you are what your record says you are. The record doesn't always tell the whole story. The score doesn't always tell the whole story. But at the end of the day, we did get beat 35-0 because we couldn't execute when it mattered.
Yeah,
isn't it crazy that this is how we're talking about like what we're seeing as success? Like, can we just put
can
up?
Can we not lose by a whole lot?
Yeah, can we see progress? That's all. That's all you can hope for. Can we see progress? Can we see signs of life and just something to hope for, in upcoming seasons, just something to be hopeful about. That's kind of where I am, but I don't see this game going well. I see, as I look at it now, 35 probably seems realistic. I imagine that's probably where the line's probably going to stay. Any cases, for or against what I'm saying here?
Seeing the line be that big scares me, because there's been games where we were only picked to lose by like 10 and then lost by like 42. So, yeah, I mean,
hey, but Illinois was like a 20 something point spread, and then
that's true. That's true.
That's a good point.
I almost feel like Walters may even game plan a little bit harder than typical for the Illinois game every year. I feel like that's one that he always really like circles on his calendar, but, yeah, gosh, I don't know. I don't know. The part of me, a lot of me just feels like this is going to be like watching the Music City Bowl all over again. Or any bowl game that we've had,
recently. The one against Auburn, right?
Yeah. The Music City Bowl. Yeah. 2018. Yeah. No, not Tennessee. I wish it'd be like Tennessee.
Yeah. So like, I'd be awesome. Thrilled if it went like the Tennessee game. Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. But I do want to shout out to, I think his name Smiley Hartford. Right. I think he was PFF's Big Ten Freshman of the Week on defense. Is that correct?
Yeah, he's been sneaky good for Purdue.
Yeah, didn't start the season healthy, right? Completely, yep. And now he's getting opportunities. So
that is one thing we can say. I mean, that we do have some young guys in the secondary who are looking really good. Teron Grant has had some really good moments this season. Smiley Bradford is looking really good. So that, I mean, Will Help is looking. I mean, there's a lot of things we can look at. I mean, Dylan Thiedemann's only a true sophomore, so a lot of good hope for the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and then
we won a game. We did win a game.
Let's talk. We did. We beat Texas A&M. Corpus Christi.
It is not false to say Texas A&M lost last night.
Yeah, not a good week to be a Texas A&M school. Yeah,
I heard this. I haven't confirmed it, but Texas A&M, the non-Corpus Christi, the actual Texas A&M, supposedly they got court stormed in football and basketball in the same week.
Yeah, when Louisville beat them, and then when UCF beat them.
Well, no, they didn't play. Louisville played
Clemson. Clemson,
yeah.
Who did A&M lose to then?
Tell me it was Vandy. Please tell me it was Vandy. No.
I'm looking. Like I said, I should have confirmed this, but I didn't think we'd be talking about Texas A&M.
Basketball. Basketball.
South Carolina. They lost to South Carolina.
Wow.
That's right. There you go, Cody.
There you go, Cody. Thank you, Cody. Appreciate you. Yeah, 44-20, so big time blowout. So, yeah, not good. And again, that frightens me, because we play Texas A&M at the Indy Classic in December. So that should be fun. They'll be angry and ready to prove themselves against what in all likelihood will be a ranked Purdue team at that time as well. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, we did have our first basketball game last night. Before we get into that, let's hop over and thank our sponsors really quickly, and then we'll talk about basketball for a second. So we'll see you guys in about 2 minutes.
Tell me, do you like to be fashionable? Do you like to look handsome or beautiful? Do you like being the best dressed Purdue fan you know? Well, guess what? We got just the place for you. It's called martinvintage.com. And if you go there, you will find the best in Purdue throwback designs on the market. I'm telling you, if you want it, they got it. Basketball, football, Purdue Pete logos, anything and everything. And if you go to martinvintage.com and use code BXB at checkout, they'll throw you 10% off your order. Now, that's a great deal if you ask me. Tell them that we sent you, and they'll say, hey, you have a slightly above average taste in podcasts. Here's 10%, because they're friends of the program and we can't thank them enough. Again, martinvintage.com. Use code BXP at checkout for 10% off. Boiler up.
Attention all college basketball enthusiasts. Are you tired of just watching the game and ready to dive deeper into the stats and strategies that make college basketball so thrilling? Introducing CBBAnalytics.com, your ultimate destination for college basketball analytics. With CBBAnalytics.com, you'll have access to the stats and insights that you need to take your love for the game to the next level. From shooting percentages to player efficiency ratings, CBBAnalytics.com has it all. Get detailed player profiles, in-depth team analysis, player and team shot charts, and even in-game trends available all at your fingertips. Do you want to know how well Purdue shoots above the break threes with 10 or fewer seconds left on the shot clock? CBB Analytics has you covered. You want to see how different lineups perform in different situations? CBBAnalytics.com has you covered. You can get a free tier subscription, which allows you to see stats for just one team. But if you truly want to elevate your game knowledge, be sure to check out the Pro Tier subscription, which allows access to all 362 Division I teams. One of our favorite features is the in-game streaming system, which displays real-time stats, analytics, and even shot charts during live games. If you're ready to expand your basketball knowledge, check out CBBAnalytics.com today.
And also, if you guys want to see Frank do some statistic little bits here on the show, drop a stat tank in the chat there for Frank, so that we know that everybody wants to hear how awesome his big brain is and how cool his stats are. Also, shout out to Cincy Blitzboards. They're not a part of that. We still need to make a commercial for them, but shout out to Cincy Blitzboards. You can get yours at cincyblitzboards.com or following them on Twitter and DMing them. You can get any logo for any school, any team. I mean, I'm sure you could even create your own logo and they'd put it on a Blitzboard for you or anything that you wanted to do on there. So great, great party game. Great for tailgating. Great for really anything. And yeah, you can get yours. So, but yeah, we played basketball. And Cody says here about the game, he will say it wasn't the prettiest game, but hey, we cleaned it up. One thing I am impressed by. Yeah, I think that they definitely did improve. I was getting a little worried. I was at a church event that night and I kept checking my phone and I was saying, oh, wow, this is this the right game? I was getting a little worried there, but it seems like the team was able to pull it together. And I mean, a couple of the guys had a really, really good night, it seems like. Who are you guys most impressed by?
It's Braden, honestly. I mean, we have expectations for Braden, right? That he, mm-hmm. I'll just ask the question. Is Braden the best point guard in the Big Ten based off of what we know right now?
Yes, he is the best point guard in the country. Yes.
Okay. Well, that was going to be my second question. But I mean, you could argue there are better scorers, let's say, but you know, from a floor general.
You didn't ask if it was the best scorer.
Yeah, yeah. In the traditional point guard sense, I mean, the thing is you know, you look at his stat line from last night, which I should have on the screen. I don't. 12 points, 15 assists, 8 total rebounds. And all I can think about were the assists that he didn't get. I don't know how many times he found an open shooter, especially early in the second half when we had that scoring drought and the shot just didn't go in. I mean, mm-hmm. And the thing is people were trolling on Twitter and you know, sharing their opinions, which that's fine. But they were saying, oh, your preseason Big Ten player of the year only has 12 points. You know, what does that mean? Well, they were double teaming him off of ball screens all night and forcing him to pass. And so he just embraced that and created 15 shots off of that. I mean, so I think the fact that he didn't try to force anything if it wasn't there through all these double teams and through these blitzes, I see that as a good thing. I see that as a mature, patient point guard. I think he sent a message that if that's your game plan, if your goal is to make me get the ball out of my hands, go for it, because I'm going to find the open guy and we're still going to create offense off of that. Now, he did have 6 turnovers. 2 or 3 of those were, you know, a little bit of carelessness, but if the result is, you know, him getting 15 assists because he's going to be aggressive, I'll take that all night. But yeah, I think Braden was the most impressive player last night. In terms of the newcomers, that's tough. I mean, we only saw 5 minutes of Riley Burgess, so hard to get a huge pulse on him right now in a real game scenario. But I'm going to say from the newcomers, I'm going to go with Jakari Harris.
Oh, okay. I was not going there.
Neither was I.
Yeah. Because I see Jakari Harris on the floor, and multiple times I was lulled into this sense of thinking that was Lance Jones, especially defensively. I mean, just the way he's up in guys' faces, the way he's slowing down the process of bringing the ball down the court, how he's just harassing those guys just reminded me of what we saw from Lance Jones. And I had to catch myself a few times like, hey, that's not Lance Jones, because his play style, I think he's going to slide right in to that Lance Jones role and excel. I mean, his defense on ball is above average already, and he's played one game. So,
right.
I don't know. What about you guys?
I'll say your guy, Damon. Daniel Jacobson, man. I think he's our five. I think he's
that's
our
not
five.
Who I was going to say either.
Oh, really?
No, I was going to go CJ Cox.
So, yeah, Daniel Jacobson, man. You know, we talked about what does the post game, what does our front court look like outside of Trey Coffman? Like, we expect him to get his 30, 35 minutes. But, you know, with those two front court positions, right, you got 80 minutes to use. We're talking about, you know, Jacobson and Berg and Burgess and First maybe kind of splitting fairly evenly those minutes until we figure out who's going to emerge. But Jacobson gets 25 minutes, 13 points, 7 rebounds, 4-6 from the field. I mean, you know, he was pretty efficient for a true freshman in his first game as a Boilermaker. I think we found our five. I think we found our post tandem. I think it brings a different element when he's the kind of guy that might attempt a three-pointer or two a game and can actually shoot 30 to 40%, I think, on the season. He'll end up being in the 35% or so range. With Trey Coffman-Wren just getting whatever he wants down low with that spin move. He does kind of have to watch that spin move, though, because they did anticipate it a couple times. And you better believe Big Ten teams are going to watch that and expect that as well. But, yeah, Jacobson, that's impressive. It seems like he's kind of locking down that spot, and it was the first game of the season.
Yeah, I will say I hate to be that guy because I thought Jacobson had a great game too. But part of me in my brain is like, oh, well, let's, you know, he is a scrawnier fellow. So just, you know, thinking about how he'll stack up against those Big Ten centers and everything. But don't need to worry about that right now. Just one game at a time. He played great.
Well, on that note, you know, we saw Matt Harms make up for his lack of size with his shot blocking. And after watching Jacobson last night, it wouldn't surprise me to see him do the same. Yeah, because he was getting thrown around a bit, and then he would block the shot.
Three blocks. So, yeah.
Yeah.
I think I'd take Jacobson now better than over Matt Harms in his prime. You know, I think Jacobson's okay. Going to be that beneficial for us, especially by the end of the season.
Got a comment here from Eric from the OHIO podcast. What's up, boys? Any of you joining Dylan or to come over to the Columbus? Heard there's supposed to be a good game happening down at the old horseshoe. It's a good game if you're an Ohio State fan, Eric. yeah, I unfortunately can't. I had something come up for Saturday. I know Dylan's going. Russ, Damon, how are you guys planning on making the trip over to Columbus for that one?
I was going to until the season's unfolded like it has. I'm just being totally honest here. Like, that's a long drive to make to
That's a long drive, especially for you. Yeah, is that 4 hours?
Something like that, 4 or 5 hours. Yeah, that's a long drive to make to get mollywopped.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really liked CJ Cox. I think that we have found our, like, the reincarnation of Chris Kramer. I don't know if that's too bold to say, but I really like his defense. I think he has a really good eye. I mean, if that ball is anywhere close to, you know, being if he's able to make any kind of move towards that ball, he's going after it. And I mean, he made a few good passes as well, so I feel like, you know, we could really, I feel like he's going to be that guy on our team that other teams are going to just hate.
Yeah, he's tenacious. He plays hard. I mean, and we saw him in his first game get a steal, dive on the floor for the ball. And I mean, there's no better way to get Purdue fans hyped about you than to do stuff like that. And if you haven't seen the interview with the guy, I highly recommend checking it out. The one of him during practice at Mackey, extremely intelligent guy. You can just tell when he talks. Same with Trey Coffman-Wren. If you guys haven't seen him in an interview, the way he speaks, you can just tell he's a very smart guy. Very, very mature too. I mean, he's got to be what, 18, and he doesn't act like it. So
we're really lucky he just fell in our lap.
Yeah. It's crazy that clip's making national news. Go ahead, David.
No, you're good. I was gonna say, I saw a tweet that said Matt Painter, this is what makes Matt Painter so great, like his ability to recruit and find guys like this, but it also is what makes him like a lower tier D1 coach's like worst nightmare, because he will take guys away like that, that, you know, maybe only had a few offers from lower tier Division I schools. And I thought that was really funny. But yeah, I love that he's seems like a good kid. He's got a good head on his shoulders, and you know, he embodies, and that's one of the things that I love about Purdue fans, is like, you can be flashy and hit threes and, you know, be really exciting to watch, but like, when you're diving on the floor, when you're going after loose balls, when you're like when you're just playing hard, I mean, that's what gets people, I feel like, the most fired up at Mackey Arena. And it's awesome. I love that that's like really our culture, and it's embedded in everybody that's watching the game.
I think my favorite part about that story about CJ Cox is how big brained Matt Painter is, that people kind of take for granted. You know, we've talked about before, especially off the podcast, about how he's taken, you know, voice throwing lessons so that he can better communicate with his players on the floor. How many coaches are thinking to do something like that? And, you know, for him to be scouting a different player, but then pick up on CJ Cox, like, that means he's not taking his time for granted, right? If he's in the gym, he's watching everybody, right? He's not just watching, because he wouldn't just watching CJ Cox. He was watching how his teammates reacted to him, how they came up to him after the game, like talking to the coaches. Like, you know, he does his research like unbelievably well.
Yeah. And to, you know, to hear him talk about everything he did after seeing him play and you know, talking to his coaches, getting a hold of Brad Stevens, because he knew that Brad Stevens' son played with him, and everything he did. I mean, and it goes to show he's not recruiting a player. He's recruiting everyone around that player. He's recruiting that player's background. He's recruiting his, you know, his family. And Painter's talked about that. Like, you don't just get the player. You get mom, dad, cousin, uncle. You get everybody.
Yeah.
And it just goes to show that he's not just, you know, throwing around offers. But I love the fact that Painter was so candid with him, and he went to him and was like, hey, we're waiting on someone to make a decision, and if he says no, we want to recruit you. And if that turns you off, you know, so be it. But I don't want to lie to you. I don't want to tell you there's an offer when there's not, and I don't want to beat around the bush. And I mean, you can take that one of two ways. You can say like, hey, I wasn't your first choice, no thank you. Or you can say, hey, I appreciate the honesty, and yeah, I'll come play. I mean, so Painter, that's
Painter finally said, well, the other guy's dragging his feet, come on down, CJ Cox.
Yeah, he did. And I mean, things worked out for that other guy too. He looked pretty good in his debut in a blue uniform last night. So
yeah. And I think too, what's telling about our reaction to our favorite newcomer is that Painter's done it again, right? He's got another great class, that this team is in great hands moving forward. You know, as much as talked about as, you know, our big three is going to be all our production, you know, we're going to be so top heavy and we got three juniors, what's going to happen? Well, it's three juniors starting with two true freshmen. So what's that tell you about the way he's churning his roster? And this whole, he's got to be a transfer guy, he's got to do transfers and recruits. He does whatever he wants to do, and he makes it work.
Yeah, and that's, you know, Painter got a lot of criticism for not taking any transfers, and I think now, you know, maybe we're seeing why. And you know, this team is young. We have four freshmen on this team. It's been a while since we've had. I mean, wasn't it the year with PJ, Dakota,
Vince, and Isaac and all them?
Yeah. That's the thing. The last time we had four freshmen who were actually playing meaningful minutes, and it worked out. But there will be some games this season, I guarantee it, because we have such a young team, where we're going to get really mad. It's just going to happen. I mean, we saw a lot of the turnovers last night were just due to freshman mistakes. A lot of the defensive lapses just due to freshman mistakes. I think we're more versatile on defense, and I think we have a different defensive scheme than what we've seen in recent years. But I mean, guys are going to make mistakes, but we're, I mean, also these guys are getting a ton of good experience, and that's why we're seeing Braden and Fletcher. I mean, we haven't talked about Fletcher, who led the team in scoring last night at 21 points. We haven't talked about Miles Colvin still. But that just goes to show how deep this team is too.
Yeah.
Which is huge.
I will say, I'm really glad that their first, if you want to call it, big test of the year is going to be against Alabama at home. So at least they get, you know, the backing of the home crowd. Even though they're going to be playing against elite talent, you know, they're going to have that home crowd behind them there. And, you know, really get to see Mackey when it's at its full, full potential there. I didn't watch any post game interviews, but I wonder if anybody asked Jakari or CJ about what they thought about Mackey Arena after the game, because they both said that they had never watched a game at Mackey before.
I know I heard the one after the scrimmage or the exhibition. I'm sorry. I did not see the one last night with the players. I did watch the one with Painter, though. I just didn't check out the one with the players. But that'll be something to check out, because it's crazy. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. Normally, that's, you know, you think a selling point. You get to play in Mackey. You would hope, at least.
Yeah. I just got to, like, I can't imagine being CJ Cox this time last year, or just last year in general, like, whenever Matt Painter started talking to him. Because, like, just thinking about it, you know, he was getting offers from, like, a lot of Ivy League schools. And then all of a sudden, this guy who just played in a national championship is like, hey, I really like how you're playing basketball. And just go, like, going from getting just, I don't mean to say just, because I know Ivy League schools, you know, they have a good history of, like, making deep runs in the tournament and yada, yada, yada. But going from getting, like, those lower level D1 offers to then the guy who just played in the national championship is like, hey, I like how you play basketball. And you also seems like you have a good head on your shoulders. If I was CJ Cox, I'd feel like $1 million. I mean, that had to be incredible just to get that kind of kudos from Matt Painter.
I had a question
before we get too fast. I want to let you know, get your streaming apps in order, because three of our next five games, I think, are on streaming apps. So BTN Plus is like the next game against Northern Kentucky, and then Marshall, I think, down the road is BTN Plus. But that Alabama game you mentioned, that's Peacock. So,
oh, I have
you got the cock, or you ain't gonna get the game.
That Alabama team terrifies me.
Really,
they are so deep, and they have guys who I feel like have been in college for 6 years. Like Grant Nelson, he's been in college for so long, and they have our most hated guy from Rutgers, Cliff Amore, too. So, what a team, man! That is a
and we know they're always the top shooting team. So
yeah, mm-hmm. That is a talented and deep team that they have. I mean, and Mark Sears, who needs no introduction. So we'll talk about that. Cody has a question here. Is the rivalry with Lord Brother going to come back this season? Since both teams are ranked. I mean, and from where I stand, I don't think it ever went anywhere. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, there are those years, let's say with Archie Miller, where, you know, we won what, 7 in a row, but I mean, from the fans' perspective, it was still always there.
There's a lot of basketball left to be played before we get our first matchup, though, with the Hoosiers.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I mean, and both teams are just very different than what we saw last season.
Yep.
My blood is black and gold, and I'm not too fond of crimson and cream.
You want to see a doctor?
Yeah, that's not medically normal. Yeah.
I'm really excited for this year, basketball wise. It was really cool to see this freshman get out there and get to play. And I think you said it earlier, Frank. I think there are gonna be some potentially ugly games in this non-con that just, you know, Purdue doesn't play like Purdue's played, and oh, they just had a really bad night with a lot. I think there's probably going to be a couple, if not two to three games that happen like that just because of the freshmen and the, you know, the inexperience there. But I think that this is, I love the schedule for this young team leading into conference, the, you know, Big Ten conference part of the season. Cause I think that's going to get these guys so ready so quickly. As long as they take all these games as, you know, learning experiences in a really positive way, which I'm sure they will.
So one thing I feel we got to talk about for a second. The biggest surprise for me. So we talked about who is the biggest surprise, like, I guess from a newcomer standpoint, but the biggest surprise for me is just from the game as a whole was the lack of involvement and minutes from Cam Heidi.
Yeah.
10 minutes, 0 for 2 from the floor, looked hesitant to score. So it almost like he doesn't know what his role is, maybe.
What's more surprising, 10 minutes from Heidi or 2 minutes from first?
10 minutes from Heidi.
I was going to say first kind of had that last year as well with just how deep the team was and everything. But yeah, it's especially because I thought Painter made a comment in the offseason about how him and Colvin were probably going to be the two players that take the biggest leap this year. So it's really odd to see Heidi not playing much at all.
I mean, he has the athleticism. He has the scoring ability. I mean, I almost feel like I'm embarrassed to say it at this point, but I trust Matt Painter for and everything he does. Yeah. that is, I've always trusted Matt Painter. And so if he feels, and he, it could have just been a riding the hot hand thing too, with Miles Colvin. He started 4 for 4 from three. And, you know, kudos to him for wanting to keep him in and let him keep shooting if that's the case. But, yeah, I just, he looked hesitant to shoot. I mean, I don't know a better way to describe it. It's just like, it's almost like, am I supposed to shoot? Am I supposed to defend? I don't know. He is the player who I've had the highest hopes for and felt like has the highest ceiling right now. Based on what we saw last season.
And I know we're trying really to surprised. Extrapolate a heck of a lot from one game, but this is what happens when your football season starts the way it did.
Yeah.
but to talk about one more newcomer and get as much as you can out of what few minutes we saw from Burgess. The one thing, and I guess maybe a couple things that I took from him, was I think he's going to be a heck of a ball player when he carves out his role and his minutes. Because to me, at 6'11", obviously he's a big dude, but like he's not the 7'3", 7'4" guy like we've kind of had in the past. But to me, his size, he doesn't look like he'd have any trouble defending a Wilberg or a Jacobson. And he looks like he could have the athleticism and kind of, you know, footwork of like a Mason Gillis, but have the size of a guy that can play center, which could be like crazy, crazy when he gets into his own and gets comfortable on the court. I think he's going to be a heck of a ball player for us.
I have a theory about Riley Burgess. We haven't seen it, but I think he's a really good passer.
Okay.
So you're talking about let's mix Travion, like Isaac Haas and Mason Gillis and make a ball player out of him. Come on.
Do you guys want to see a play from the game?
I would love to.
Do we?
Let's do it.
Talk about why I think he's a good passer. All right, I'll pull this up here.
We get a big brain breakdown. Not even planned. This is off the cuff, you guys. If you're still tuning in, we're about to unveil.
Whoa!
All right, can we see here?
For a while. Yeah, I can see it.
Okay, so this is a play from the first half. So Heidi starts out with the ball. Okay, that's the first thing to notice. So Heidi's going to pass the ball to Burgess, and it's going to be slow motion. He's going to pass the ball to Burgess on the elbow, and then we're going to move into a horn set, which for anyone who doesn't know, a horn set is when you have two bigs on the elbow. But we're running this a little bit differently. We don't have two bigs on the elbow. We have Riley Burgess and we have Braden on the elbow. And the reason that I think that Riley Burgess is a good passer is because this is a play that the Denver Nuggets run for Nikola Jokic all the time. This exact same play. This is what's called, I'm going to get this right here. It's going to be horns rip DHO, horns rip dribble handoff. And so what's going to happen is Braden's going to set a rip screen here. A rip screen is a back screen for a big set by a guard. So he's going to set this rip screen for Heidi. And the first look Burgess is going to give is going to be to try to get Heidi the ball under the basket. So they send some help over from the perimeter here. So CJ Cox's man comes off of him to come and tag him on that roll. So that option's not there. And so then from that, we're going to flow right into a dribble handoff, which turns into a pick and roll here. That's the next action that comes out of that. So that rip screen wasn't there for Heidi. So this flows right into a pick and roll. And look what happens. We get two on the ball now. They send help over to stop Burgess on the roll. Now we have a two-on-one scenario over here. And this is a brilliant play by Braden. He knows that this one defender is having to guard these two guys now. And so he stares down Cam Heidi, stares at him. He's looking right at Cam Heidi right now. Then the defender sees that. The defender's like, that's the guy I need to close out to. CJ Cox sneaks in behind him for a wide open three. So that the fact that we are running plays where the first look is a 5-4 pass, like we ran stuff similar to this with Jaden Ivey and Travion. But to me, that says Riley Burgess is a really, really good passer. And that, like, the first thing way we're looking to score out of this is a pass off of a rip screen from Braden Smith. So to me, I think we're in good shape with him.
I love it.
Yeah. Got all sorts of plays, but yeah, I just decided since we're talking about it, that, that'd be one to talk about. But, I would be remiss, guys, if we didn't talk about our Boilers and the Pros for a second, too. I'm wearing the jersey, Jaden Ivey. We can start with him. He's having a really good season. He's playing 32 minutes for the Pistons, 40% from three, is averaging 20 points a game. He looks comfortable. He looks like he's not overreaching. He's just playing within himself, and he's playing really, really well. I mean,
his defense.
I mean, by a lot of metrics, he is one of the worst defenders in the NBA. It's gotten a lot better this season, though. And it's not that he has a lack of athleticism or a lack of ability to play defense. It's all mental for him.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's looking really, really good. I mean, they thumped the Lakers last night. His name was like a 20-plus point win. And he played him. He's the second leading scorer behind Cade Cunningham. But it is him and Cade's team. It is the Jaden Ivey and Cade Cunningham show in Detroit. And they're a fun team to watch. So if anyone out there has got league pass, hasn't watched the Pistons, they're young, but man, they are fun to watch. Jalen Duren is like maybe my favorite center right now outside of Jokic. He's awesome. He's extremely talented.
Whoa.
Yeah, Jaden Ivey is looking really good. And I know why you just said whoa. Because I forgot about our other pro boiler, Zach Edey, who is a
center. I mean,
he's a center, yeah. And you want to say that he's shutting down all the haters, like he's silencing all the haters, but he's not. He's not silencing all the haters. It's funny. I had an argument today on Twitter, and then the guy deleted his tweet, but he said the only reason Zach Edey's playing well is because no one in the NBA plays defense anyway. So, I'm like, well, wait a second. You all said he would never play in the NBA because he's not good enough. And now that he is playing well, now you're saying, well, that's just because no one plays defense, which is so far from true.
As a Pacers fan, I hate to say this about this guy, but since Dylan's not here and he isn't going to get his ego stroked by me saying something like this, LeBron James has more haters than like anybody else, maybe in the history of the NBA. So, you know, doesn't matter how well Zach Edey does, he's going to have a line of haters.
Oh yeah. And it's always going to be, they're going to be creative. It's going to be like, oh, well, you know, then I think you may have said this earlier in our chat, Frank, like, oh, okay, well now he's not going to be good when it comes to the playoffs, or maybe that was like a Dustin Shute tweet that I read or something. Somebody said something about like, okay, he's not good in the regular season, but then like in the playoffs, or he's good in the regular season, but in the playoffs, he won't be good, or this, he won't be good. It's going to always be that next thing.
We're just going to keep moving the goal, right? Like, right. Well, he'll never make it in the NBA. Well, it looks like he's making it in the NBA. Well, now let's just move the goal line a little further and say he'll never get there. It's like now they're going to start saying, well, he'll never be an all-star. You know, it's like, okay, like the vast majority of players aren't. So, yeah, I mean, he came up coming off of his best game, at least offensively last night, 25 points. I think it was 12 rebounds, 5 blocks. Was 10 for 11 from the floor or 11 of 12. I don't remember which one.
Yeah, only missed one shot.
Hit a walk-up three. I mean, and all that's impressive. But I think to me, the most impressive thing was that when the game was tied with 2 minutes to go, he was on the floor. Like, he was there in crunch time, and he hit two huge shots to continue the game. I mean, it came down to a final possession against the Nets where they unfortunately lost. But, I mean, I think to me that shows that this Memphis team is all in on him. I mean, we've seen in some closer games this season where, you know, when the game gets close at the end, he takes a seat. And last night they kept him on the floor. And like I said, it didn't go the Grizzlies' way, but he's playing really well. He looks really good. And his lack of defense that people talked about, I don't see it. I mean, he steps out, he's guarding guys. He had like I said, 5 blocks last night. That block he had against Damian Lillard, I mean, who else does it have to be, you know, for people to stop doubting the guy?
I think the real question is, forget bust, forget all-star, forget rookie of the year. Are we going to see a rookie in Caleb Williams and a rookie in Zach Edey both win MVPs of their respective leagues this year? Like, come on, man.
No,
I don't get it. I'm not gonna lie.
I don't. I think that's. I think that's.
Very no, I'm sorry. Not Caleb Williams. Jaden Daniels. I don't know what I'm thinking. Caleb okay. Williams. Jane, whatever.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, that's a. I mean, Jaden Daniels could definitely win MVP. Not sure Edie is quite there yet. One day though. One day. But I think he's playing in a really good system. If he's
progressing at this rate, he's gonna be dropping 50 burgers in no time, and it'll be hard to deny the MVP at that point.
But total stats on the season, he is playing 20 points or 20 minutes, excuse me, 20 minutes per game. He's 50% from three. He's averaging 0.5 threes per game. So pretty good. 6.5 rebounds, turnovers, one turnover, and only three fouls, which, I mean, he got a lot of heat when he fouled out in his first game, but has kind of kept that under control ever since. So I think he only had one last night and he played 25 minutes. So. It's a really, right. really big deal. But yeah, it's odd. I mean, I can't think of a player. This is going to sound corny, but I can't think of someone who deserves success more, to just put it that way. So
apparently Russ really didn't agree with that. Russ's that opinion.
Yeah. So,
but it is about that time though. We are hitting our hour mark. Frank, did you have any final thoughts on Zach or Jaden or the Purdue basketball team, Purdue football, anything like that?
No, I mean, Purdue plays Friday. I think it is on Big Ten Plus, as Russ mentioned.
Against Northern Kentucky.
Northern Kentucky, who is a ranked 168th in KenPom, had a 12-point loss to Florida State. I do expect this game to be, you know, a higher level of competition. So Purdue's going to have to show up. It should be a fun one, and just excited for basketball, man. It's been a tough football season.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I was thinking, I thought a former like Purdue assistant under Matt Painter was coaching Corpus Christi, but I think they had previously, but I think he's at Oklahoma State now. I think it was like Steve Lutz or somebody else. I thought somebody went to Corpus Christi.
I think it was Steve Lutz. I think he was a former assistant to Steve Lutz is what it was.
Oh,
who was under Painter, who's now at Oklahoma State, I believe.
Okay.
After Western Kentucky. Yeah.
Gotcha. So, I thought a former Texas A&M Corpus Christi coach was under Matt Painter recently, but I'm probably just thinking of somebody else, but we've got a game on Friday. Then I think they turn around and play again on Monday. They play Yale on Monday as well. So going to have two games to talk about for next week. And then football, you know, Lord praying for a miracle to beat the Ohio State Buckeyes. That'd be crazy. We'll appreciate everybody tuning in tonight. I know that there's a lot going on in the world, so appreciate everybody tuning in to talk about some Purdue athletics. And we'll see you next time. Boiler up, hammer down.